Broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University, this is WSDL Ocean City, NPR News Talk 90.7, putting Delmarva first. It's time for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
Plans to turn a former Vlasic pickle factory into a chicken processing plant near Millsboro could bring some 700 jobs to the area. It has also brought controversy and opposition. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. Facility sits on more than 170 acres of land on Pinnacle Way, just outside Millsboro. The Korean company, Allen Harem, has entered into a brownfield development agreement promising to clean up hazardous chemicals left over from 40 years of operation. Company promises to spend as much as $100 million to redevelop the site. But local residents have raised questions in opposition to the idea of having this facility nearby, fearing that it could damage the Indian River as well as surrounding residential areas. Allen Harem says that since it is still in negotiations, it did not feel it could participate in this program. But in studio we have Cindy Wilton and Jay Meyer. He's with the Protecting Our Indian River. And also in studio is Rob Arlett. He is the former chair of the Public Policy Committee for the Sussex County Association of Realtors. So welcome to all. And Rob, I want to start with you first and tell me a little bit about why you're in support of this facility.
I will first off premise that I'm fighting a little bit of a cold, so I do apologize in advance. I'm going to do my best here for 30 minutes, and I have a nice hot cup of tea, so I thank you for that. So we will crawl through this as best as we can on the voice. But and thank you again for having us this morning. I think it's very important to have a get-together together and to talk about this. And so we can really, in the end, find a solution, I think, that benefits all. And that's really, truly my goal. Why do I support this? Most importantly, I believe, is because we are desperate in need of 700 jobs in Sussex County. That would be my number one reason for supporting this. I believe that we economically are in despair. Disparity. I know that would be a number one thing. I think a number two thing is that you have an existing building that has had issues. There's no denying of that, from my perspective anyways. And I think it's a matter of holding those organizations and those authorities accountable to make sure that as we do move forward and find another company, of course, that is willing to come in and invest $100 million in our local economy, to benefit the local economy, I think is something that's very important.
So what is it that you think that this facility is going to bring to the area, and how do you deal just sort of generally with this concern that there are going to be environmental impacts as well as some impacts in terms of traffic and so on?
Sure.
I mean, these are a whole set of concerns. And how well thought out do you think this was in terms of those kinds of concerns?
Well, I think, number one, the plan is not new. I mean, it has been there for many years. And I think, you know, as it was there, you know, in its former capacity, I mean, there was obviously traffic issues and traffic concerns. And I think that, you know, I think this is a little bit different in the sense that it's an existing building. And all you're doing is just shifting, you know, a new tenant, if you would, into this new building, to an existing building, if you would. And, you know, obviously, as far as the traffic concerns and the environmental concerns, we have to work through those. There's no question. My goal is to come to a consensus that benefits all. I don't think you can, it's only one or the other. I'm not of that opinion. I think that we can achieve all. I really do believe that, and I think that's why I think it's important that we do come together so we can understand the benefits of why we should have this and also the concerns of why some, of course, are against that. And I respect that and appreciate that viewpoint very much so. But I think in the end, I think we need to work together to find a resolution that can benefit all.
I want to turn to Cindy Wilton and Jay Meyer. They're with Protecting Our Indian River. And either one of you want to start, maybe Cindy. So what is the basic problem overall? And we'll get into a lot of the details. But what is the basic problem that you have with this, with moving this to a processing plant?
My main concern, my major problem is the contamination that's over there, which has been a big concern since day one. My second is, you know, you say about the 700 jobs. The problem is I know Mount Air on Route 24 has had a sign about job openings, all shifts, posted outside for years. And if they can't hire positions, how is Alan Harim going to fill these positions? And Jay might want to.
Yeah, and there's actually a article in the News Journal paper. I think it was Roger Marino, who's one of the spokesmen for Mount Air, stated that they have 300 job openings. They've had them for the past 3 years at $13.86 an hour plus benefits, and they can't get anybody to take the jobs. I contacted Purdue over here in Salisbury, a manager whose name I cannot mention, and he said they have the same exact problem at the Purdue plant in Salisbury, finding people that are willing to go in there and work at a job that is, number one, very unhealthful, very dangerous, and they just cannot, you know, keep the workers there. My main opinion on the number one reason why I'm against it, and our group also, is think about it. 12 million gallons of wastewater from cleaning chickens a week dumped into the Indian River, which flows into the Indian River Bay all along Potnets and his other communities, that flows into Rehoboth Bay, that flows into Dewey Beach and Bethany Beach. What are the effects going to be on the environment, the swimming, the fishing, the boating activity? And it's Delaware's number one resource is their tourism. What effect is this going to have on the waterways after, say, 20, 30 years of 12 million gallons being dumped into the river?
I want to turn, first of all, Rob, in terms of the jobs issue, because they raised this issue, but there are jobs open.
Sure.
They're not finding people. What about that?
Well, I think it's a valid point, but I think, you know, there are, and I don't know the specific jobs, and I don't know the specific people who and why they're not going out and fulfilling those jobs, but I think, you know, there is no excuse for laziness, in my opinion. And the reality is I wish that more people would go out and do the jobs that are available. I don't disagree with that. I think that there are opportunities that exist. People don't take advantage of them. That doesn't take away the opportunity and the requirement of the jobs that were there for a new business. And you know, and obviously as a business owner myself and any business, they're going to do what they have to do to find the employees, the staff, to man a business. Whether or not they can get it from the local resource of individuals or they have to transplant people into the area. You know, I've been in the area for 8 years, and I started a company, you know, 3 years ago. So, you know, I've brought industry back into Sussex County as will others. And the reality is, for me, it's a valid point, but that's not a reason why you don't allow a company to come in here to conduct business. They're going to do what they have to go do to find the employees to run their business. And if they can't find them in Sussex County, then they will recruit. They will advertise in other areas to bring people into Sussex County, which, again, is a big plus. That's a big positive.
Well, I want to turn to the issue about containment. And I know that I think it was DNREC, which essentially looked at this and basically said that they didn't feel that there was remedial actions necessary for human health and aquatic life required. And as I understand it, by the way, one of the issues was whether or not the contamination that is at the plant, whether or not it has moved out of a certain particular areas. That's what they were talking about. My understanding is they've looked at this, or scientists have looked at this, and basically said, we don't see anything. We think the contamination itself is contained, and therefore we're not going to see the kind of seepage into the groundwater. Cindy, I'll turn to you. What about that?
If you're not looking for something, then you're not going to find it if you don't look in the right spots. And I know we did our own testing. We did, 13 wells in a vicinity. And out of those 13 wells, half of them came back. And it's not the question of just cobalt, but half of them came back with high levels of cobalt. So the point is that it did travel. And in 1991, one of our FOIA requests showed that Vlasic and Denrek had conversations. And if this plume wasn't kept in check, that there was a possibility that it would be going down towards Possum Point. So it has. So my problem is, you know, they're saying about the contamination that, you know, Alan Harim is going to spend all this money cleaning it up. Well, how did it become a brownfield to begin with? If Denrek was doing their job, it never should have got this far. That's my problem.
I would agree. We're here to working with you, and I would totally agree with you that the government agencies that are there to protect us
are not.
As public citizens perhaps are not, and they have to be held accountable. I'm not disagreeing with you. We are together on this. And again, you know, as it relates to, you know, Harim coming in and investing $100 million to clean it up, that's a great thing. And in essence, the way, from my viewpoint, and I've not read all the reports, and I to be very honest with you, but just from the common sense standpoint of it, if you've got a company coming in willing to invest $100 million to clean up the mess that perhaps the government agencies did not police properly, that's a good thing. That's less burden on the taxpayers because the private industry is going to come in and clean that up. But again, I think that we are together on these matters, but I think it's a matter of holding the government agencies accountable. That's a separate discussion. I would agree with you, and we could talk all day about that one.
Is this an issue of confidence? I mean, is that the right thing will be done? I mean, Robert's essentially saying he has confidence that the Herm's going to come in, that they're going to spend all this money, they're going to clean it up, and that the state and federal officials will be out there and saying, okay, everything's good. On the other hand, I get the sense from Cindy is you don't have the confidence that that's going to happen. Is that right?
You're exactly right. I don't. How do we know they're going to do it? They say all this stuff is state of the art, just like Mount Air was state of the art. And I don't trust them. No, I do not. Yeah. Not by any means.
So, Rob, how do you overcome this?
Well, I think that they need to do their part in providing justification to allow trust. It's all about relationships. I mean, I'm with you, and I think relationships is all built on trust. And I think the reality is if there's trust that does not exist, well, they meaning Harim, need to do a much better job in providing trust to the community. They do. And how should they be able to do that? Well, we have to look in their backdrop. And do they have any other facilities out there that exist that have problems? That would be my number one question to them. And I don't know that answer.
They've had a lot of violations.
But I mean, that would be a number one question that I would be asking of them. So really, it gets back down to how can we come up with a system to hold them accountable for their word? If they're coming in saying that they're going to invest $100 million, clean up this mess, provide 700 jobs to the local economy, which are all very good, all very positive, really what we ought to be talking about is how can we come up with a system to hold them accountable and be good for their word?
Yeah, but number one, like you said, the 700 jobs are not going to go to Delaware residents. We know that.
How do we know that?
Because Rob just said that they're going to probably, since Mount Air and Purdue can't find workers, they're going to probably have to use other sources to go and find jobs through recruiting. And by recruiting, that could mean they would go to other states to find workers. Or they could bring workers in from South Korea to work at their plant. Now, I'd like to make a statement about the $100 million investment that Alan Harim, people keep saying, are going to invest into this property. This money is not coming from Alan Harim. This money is coming from the EB-5 program.
Which is
where investors in a foreign country who want to invest $500,000 or more into a company here in the United States will get a free ticket to citizenship for them and their family for the United States. It's a green card, I don't know the complete specifics of it. But through Freedom of Information Act, you know, we've seen where these Chinese investors, people from China and other countries, are anxious to get this program going so they can become United States citizens. So Alan Harim isn't investing their own money into this thing. It's coming from Chinese investors and people from other countries.
Rob?
Sounds like the rest of the economy in many ways, right? So, but the reality is it's $100 million, it's $100 million is coming into Sussex County. The source is the source. I mean, you know, we all borrow money from different institutions. Where that comes from, I couldn't always tell you that. But the reality is it is coming into Sussex County, and that's where we have to focus. In reference to 700 jobs all coming from Sussex County, well, if the workers are working in Sussex County, they're going to be living in Sussex County. Correct? Now, they may not originate from Sussex County. They may be transplanted from Pennsylvania, from New Jersey, from Virginia, wherever the workers may be. Absolutely. And I think, again, that is a good thing for Sussex County as far as to, you know, we have a smart growth initiative. And I think that gets back down to the reutilization and the repurposing of this building, number one. And also, you know, bringing the employment back into Sussex County. We need jobs in Sussex County. We are desperate for Sussex County jobs. We really are. And here's a willing player to come in with $100 million to invest in Sussex County long term. This is not a fly-by-night organization. So if they're willing to clean up the facility and clean up the mess that perhaps the government did not oversee properly, again, I see that as a win-win situation. And as it relates to, you know, perhaps some of these employees coming from, you know, Korea, that may very be possible. But I also know that the initiative the thing that you had stated as far as the funds there, it's a very small percent. I believe it's 5%. Is that there is a very black and white amount of people that they're allowed to bring in from their country. It's a very small percent. It's not a very large percent. So that might be the case. But then again, they should. If they have leadership from their country that they need to bring in to oversee the operation, I think that's what's wrong with that. I think, and to allow Sussex County to get the international exposure, I don't think is a bad thing at all either.
Yeah, but, you know, to answer that question in a sense, the, you know, with the 700 jobs, number one, we are not against immigration. If it hasn't been for immigration, who would we have cutting our grass, working and a lot of different jobs here? But what my concern is, they bring these people in, they go to work there, mm-hmm. And eventually, when they find out that the conditions of the work in that plant, they leave. So then what happens to them? They're here. They're not working for the chicken plant no more. They have no money. They have no nothing. Who suffers the burden of them? It's the state governments. It's every program that there is. And I'm not against immigration.
Sure. No, I think it's a valid point, Jay. I think we could also talk about that exact same thing in reference to the housing boom, right, that we just went through back in 05 and 06, right? You know, there were a lot of people that came into Sussex County in the building boom that worked in the construction field, correct? And what happened when the bubble got burst? Well, what happened to those folks? I mean, there's apartment complexes that have been vacant right around the corner from where I live that are decrepit, that need to be get bulldozed, and a lot of those folks actually lived in that facility, and so the reality is we cannot predict the future, and I don't disagree with you, but to prevent this from happening on something that you have no clue, if somebody's going to come here and doesn't like the conditions of working there, I can't talk about much of that, to be very honest with you.
I want to actually turn to something that Rob should know something about, and that is property values and
sure.
Real estate, right?
Absolutely.
And one of the concerns is that if you put up this processing plant, mm-hmm. that one of the impacts is going to be on property values,
sure.
and being able to get from here to there in terms of traffic congestion.
Sure.
As somebody who's looking at real estate all the time, what kind of impact do you see, particularly if somebody says, well, it's this really great neighborhood, but it does have this chicken processing plant down the way. Now, whether or not you can see it, whether or not you can smell it, nonetheless, mm-hmm. it's sitting there. What about that concern?
Well, again, I think as it gets back down to the Smart Growth Initiative, I see this as a huge positive for property values, and let me share with you why. Number one, you have an existing building that's vacant, that is deteriorating, correct, and is perhaps corroding the environment right now. Right at this moment. So when it comes to property values, and you as a community know that that plant right now is sitting vacant, being decrepit and deteriorating and possibly polluting the environment, what does that do to property values? I can tell you right now, because I've had listings within walking distance of this facility, And it was a foreclosure, multiple foreclosures. The existing area right around this plant is in huge desperation as far as the housing. There, it is very depressed, and I would agree with you. It is very, very depressed today, right now. That area is very depressed. Why? Because from various reasons, but number one, you have a plant that did close that a lot of employees got laid off. What happened to those properties? What happened to those properties? Well, many of them went to foreclosure, which I ended up turning around and listing from the bank. So from my perspective, again, you've got 700 people coming in. They need to live somewhere. Okay, I'm not so naive to think, and I'm not here to promote our organization or even to promote the fact that we even think that they're going to come go out and buy 700 homes. That's really not what this is about at all. What this is about, from my perspective, again, is common sense and holding people accountable and responsible for the environment. So as it gets back down to property values, it's all about supply and demand. You got 700 people that need homes that will increase the demand for homes. What will that do? Well, that'll get people in vacant homes, number one, taking care of those homes, taking care of the grass, and it will revitalize this area around the plant and also increase property values because of the demand. So I see just the opposite.
Here's Cindy.
Right. Has anybody ever come up to you? I know myself, when we were looking for a house in 2005, first of all, I was a little upset that I was never, ever told about the Brownsfield that's across the street,
right,
or let alone the Superfund that surrounds that area, let alone another contaminated site of the chickens that they produced vaccines for. Slaughtering chickens is a lot more detrimental to the environment than an empty building. I would much rather live across the street from an empty building. You've got blood, you've got guts, you've got feathers, you've got traffic. I mean, that's just pointing out a few.
Manure.
Manure. Chicken, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. When someone is looking for a house, do they come to you and say, you know, I'd like to live next to a chicken slaughterhouse? I didn't.
Sure. No, and therefore, that is your opinion, and therefore, you would not move into one. But there are plenty of plants in the area, whereas people do. And again, it's all about the disclosure. So if people know that in advance, there's no issue. And if you were not aware of what was going on around that plant, I can't speak to that because I wasn't your agent, and I was not the owner of that particular property. But it's all about disclosure. So, you know, here, it's all about keeping it up out in the open, and which is why we're here today, to talk about this in the open. But it's all about the disclosure, and if somebody is not being true and honest on the disclosure, then that's on them. But again, as far as to the, you know, the killing of chickens and the smell, well, that's on HRM. That's their responsibility to maintain that and control that within the building, as they say they will. And again, I think there's lots of industries and businesses that have to be responsible, do their part in the process for the public. And it gets back down to the trust. And, you know, and I don't disagree, you know, at all, you know, Cindy, in reference to we need to trust them. We need to trust the government to do their part in the policing. And again, can I ask one quick question, if mm-hmm. I may, and to both of you? And that is, if HRM is going to come through on what they say, as far as the investment, the opportunities for employment, the responsibility of maintaining this plant responsibly, and filtering of the water as it comes out of the Indian River, goes in through their systems and goes back into the river cleaner than when they got it. That's what they say, correct? You know that. And the government, if they were to police and do their job, these agencies that we pay for as taxpayers, we pay those salaries for them to do their job. If they were to come through and do those things, would you be in agreement? Would you be okay with this happening?
No, because no. I don't believe that
no
they're going to do it. The word you just said is if.
Correct.
If they do their job. If they didn't do it in the past. Go ahead,
yeah. Jerry. If the government was going to do their job, if DENREC was going to do their job, don't you think back in 1991 when the Elastic Pickle Company said to them, listen, and I got the paper right here with me, and I can read what they said. There's nitrates going towards the people's wells in Possum Point.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think the government would have done something about it? No. What did they do? They kept it in their files and never did a darn thing about it. So would you trust them? Do you trust the government now?
I mean, look what's going on in the United States.
I would say
come
no.
on. Now.
I think you know me by now. Yeah. I would say no.
No, no, you don't trust them.
Correct.
And as far as, I guess, some of the other statements you're saying about leaving the plant vacant, we have a person that we know who can provide 200 to 300 jobs in a production facility at that site, mm-hmm. and the state of Delaware doesn't even want to listen to him. This guy has a product. He wants to produce it. It's assembly-type work. Mm-hmm. There's no dumping into the river or anything like that. And the state of Delaware don't even want to talk to the guy. Well, Let me finish. Yeah. Something's going on here. Something's going on with Alan Harum and the government in the state of Delaware and the Markell administration. Something's fishy here.
Yep.
That could be true,
you know.
And I don't know any information about that.
Let me break in because it gives me sort of the last part of this segment, which is the idea that there's an awful lot of people who favor this. I mean, there's a lot of ongoing political movement. I mean, obviously, as you point out, Governor Jack Markell favors it. The Agriculture Secretary in Delaware favors it. And I ran across the mayor of Millsboro, Robert Bryan, who says if they're going to do whatever has to be done, meaning Harum, they can't sweep it under the rug. If there are contaminated soils, it's going to have to be taken care of. Here you have the local mayor, who obviously has a town that's nearby this facility, and he's obviously going to be directly affected. It sounds to me like the political stars are aligning that this will happen unless there's some real serious catch on the regulatory agent side of things. Is that the way you read it? I mean, and why would, and I guess the question becomes, why would a local mayor whose town would be affected by this support the idea of having it if he thought or if it were a bad idea?
I just want to say one thing, yeah, and then I'll give it to you, Jay.
Go ahead.
There's a lot of people that also oppose this. Mm-hmm. I know we have a Facebook page. We have 173 members. We have a website, www.protectingourindianriver.com, and I get hits on that every single day. 12, mm-hmm. 15, 7 people hitting that every day. So there's a lot that oppose this.
Mm-hmm. And to say the point, why is John Atkins, Ed Key, all these guys for it? They're all Democrats. They're listening to their boss. If your boss tells you this is what we want and this is how we're going to do it, I don't care whether you're in politics, you're working for DuPont's or General Motors or anything, you do what the boss says. Look what happened. Something's going on with Colin O'Mara. He just bailed out. They said, oh, he's taking a different job. He's getting out of the hot water here. Something's going on. And let me say one more thing.
I'm sure about that.
I just want to say one more thing.
We can talk about
you,
that too.
You know something? The state of Delaware stopped Mount Air poultry producing plant from dumping into the Indian River. They stopped the Millsboro wastewater treatment plant from dumping into the Indian River. Why are they going to allow Alan Harum to dump into the river? Somebody give me that answer to the question.
The only thing that I can think of is that they're putting in cleaner water. I mean, if somebody's told somebody to stop it, I would presume that there's some dirty water going in there. And again, I'm just thinking common sense. Maybe I'm very naive, Jay.
Well, I think you are.
Perhaps I am, too. But I'm an optimist. But I also hold people accountable. Truly. Yeah. I say that very sincerely. I'm not going into anything with complete naiveness, but I also believe that people should be held accountable.
Yeah, but held accountable. But after there's a spill, after there's a problem, it's too late.
Right.
Look, you see it every day in a paper. Just what happened down here in Virginia, where the oil cars derailed, blew up, oil went all into the Chesapeake Bay. You hear it every day. Something happens somewhere, and fine, they're in there, and they have a violation. Oh, well, Denrec will fine them $20,000. Big deal. They ruined the river. They ruined the fishing. They ruined the crabbing. So what do you got? You got 700 jobs nobody's going to take.
What is it? 80% of our rivers and streams and waterways are polluted. Why is that? Why continue to add to it?
Well, I find it interesting that this dialogue actually, as it relates to the politics, the local politics as well as the state politics, because I think to interject politics within this discussion is required because it's a part of the process. It's a part of the approval process. A couple things as it relates to this. Number one, Democrats typically are in favor of quote unquote a good environment, correct? They are. That's part of their platform.
Doesn't sound like it.
I'm just speaking from the bigger picture here, correct? Know. I'm speaking from the bigger picture. Democrats proclaim to be the folks that support the environment. That would be number one. Number two, you said you mentioned to Representative Atkins and some others as being Democrats are in support of this because they're in quote unquote in cahoots with the governor. I can't speak to that. Maybe that's true. Maybe that's not true. But also there's a bipartisan support. I also know Senator Hawker, a Republican in this district, is in support of this as well. So there is bipartisan across the board support for this. And also, you know, as it relates to the environment. And I find that very interesting, though. You are correct. As it relates to the environment and Democrats are you know, claim to be the pioneers and the champions for a good environment, but yet there's a lot of pollutions. They claim there's a lot of pollutions out there. And again, they've been at the helm in the state of Delaware for quite a number of years now. They have, and we all know that. It's been one-party control for many years in Delaware. So the reality is, if there are real problems, then I would hold the Democrats accountable because they've been in control. Why are there problems if you've been in control? But that's a side note as it relates to this topic here.
Right.
Getting back to the focusing of this here, there is bipartisan support from all parties because I believe that it's a good thing for all. I do believe this is a good thing for all so long as people are held accountable and do what they say.
Okay, we're going to wrap this up, but before I do, so I'm just going to go around and just sort of give you 30 seconds. So, Cindy, so where do you see this process going? And do you think that this your efforts to stop this from happening is going to come to fruition?
What I can say to that is, you know what? Alan Harim expected to be here in 2014 in November producing chickens. Guess what? They're looking at least not until 2016 or later. So what we're doing is making an impact, and I personally won't stop.
Jay, real quick.
I feel the same way, but I want to say this area is already overburdened with industries. We got Thurgood's concrete plant, Indian River power plant, Merck pharmaceutical plant, Mount Air poultry plant, slaughter plant, Mount Air feed and grain plant, Mount Air rendering plant, Millsboro waste treatment facility, all within a 2-mile radius of our house. We are being overburdened with pollution and industry, and it's not fair. And I agree with what Cindy said. We are going to fight this until the end. We've got some key things in our pocket that we cannot even say right now. But you guys are going to be very, very shocked in the near future.
Rob?
Very shocked.
Rob?
Well, in closure, I just appreciate, again, the opportunity of being here together with Jay and Cindy to talk about this, because I think it's important that we do more of this. I really believe so, and I hope that we get invited back to do more of this here on your radio station, as well as others that might be listening. But I think, again, I'm a solution guy, so let's look at the solutions. Let's figure out how we can find a solution to make it both happen, meaning a good, clean environment, because we all love the bay, we all love the waterways, it's all important to our lives, it is. It's important to all of us. So we need to make sure we protect that. I'm with you on that. I just don't think it has to be one or the other. I think we can accomplish both, that's all.
We've been speaking with Cindy Wilton and Jay Meyer. They're with Protecting Our Indian River. And also with us, Rob Arlett. He is the former chair of the policy committee for the Sussex County Association of Realtors. I appreciate you all taking the time
Thank
to speak
you.
With us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
And next we'll be talking about the wind project in Somerset County right after this break. You're listening to Delmarva Today.
Chris Heim inviting you to join me in the Global Village for the best in music from around the globe. Each week, we journey around the world for the most compelling new releases, rare and classic recordings, birthday spotlights, and other features and specials, along with a surprising array of artists from almost every style imaginable who incorporate international sounds into their work. That's all in the Global Village, Saturdays at 4 here on WSDL 90.7 FM.
When you listen to Folk Alley, you become part of a tradition that has been handed down for hundreds of years, a link in the chain that includes the ancient child ballads and the latest release from Mumford & Sons. Bluegrass, blues, swing, zydeco, it's all part of the Folk Alley mix. I'm Matt Watroba. You'll also meet the performers and hear exclusive recordings every week on Folk Alley.
Friday night at 9
on WSDL 90.7 FM.
It's called the Great Bay Wind Project, a $200 million investment that would produce 150 megawatts of electricity from over two dozen turbines in Somerset County. But there's a measure on the governor's desk that would delay their construction and perhaps even kill the project. Welcome to Back to Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush. Now, during the legislative session in Annapolis this year, the House Minority Leader in Washington, Steny Hoyer, came to the Maryland Capitol to lobby for the delay, and he brought with him a letter from the state's two senators. Maryland Democrat told legislators that the wind farm could interfere with the radar at the Patuxent Air Naval Station and that a study is needed. There were also concerns about the economic impact on southern Maryland if the base were affected. For Somerset County, the project is seen as a major boost to the economy of one of the poorest counties in the state, with its 10.2% unemployment rate last year. It's now in the hands of Governor Martin O'Malley, who has presidential ambitions of his own as he ponders whether he's going to sign the legislation or not. We have reached out to supporters of the moratorium, so far have been unable to get some on the program, and certainly we renew that offer. Meanwhile, in the studio with us is an opponent of the moratorium, Bob Burkett. He's executive director of the Mid-Atlantic Renewable Energy Coalition. Also later in the program, we'll be speaking with Gregory Farley. He's chair of the task force that was created by the legislature. So, Bob, first of all, I want to turn to you and to talk to you about the fact that this is a situation where you may well see the governor sign this thing and say, hey, you know, it's we're going to have this moratorium. What's your sense about where this is going at this point in terms of the of this legislation?
Well, I can't say for sure where it's going. That's completely in the governor's hands at this point. But it's on his desk. He's certainly made some statements where he has concerns about the legislation. We're very hopeful that when he finally makes his decision, it's to veto the bill. We think the bill is unnecessary. The base, of course, is a very integral part of the landscape in Maryland. And we certainly support everything about the base, but we think that this bill is completely unnecessary, given what's occurred the past 4 years in discussions between the developer Pioneer Green, who is the would be the owner of the and operator of the facility, and the Navy and the base itself, who've essentially worked out an agreement. It hasn't been completely signed by all the parties yet. That the base itself did sign it, but it's at the Department of Defense now, and so we think it's unnecessary. And there's been a process, and if the base did not want this project, if they felt that it was without the mitigation agreement that would be part of this, that they felt that it would be any bit detrimental to its operations, they would not have gone through this at this point.
Now, are you surprised, by the way, at the vote on this? I mean, in the House of Delegates, it was 122-12, and the state Senate was 31-16. I mean, it was overwhelming in terms of in favor of this moratorium.
Yeah, I can understand it, too. I mean, yeah, the base is a, as I said, is a very important part of the economic landscape and in Maryland, and it's very important. And so there's always sensitivity when the base closing commission, the BRAC commission, starts its work. I think there's a lot of super sensitivity to what those decisions could mean. But we certainly don't see this as anything that would be a negative impact on the base. And so we understand the political concerns there, but we think the practical concerns or the practical situation is that this will not cause any undue impact on the base and should not play any part in the BRAC decision for a variety of reasons.
Well, let me ask you this. Is this a situation where we have really two different parts of the state sort of battling against one another? I mean, there's great concern, I know, in the southern Maryland about the idea that the base employs something like 22,000 people. It's constantly something like $7.5 billion as an economic hub of the region and so on. That's on the one hand, they fear that that might be affected, as opposed to certainly what Somerset County wants, which is like the lowest. I mean, I think it's like one out of three people only make less than $25,000 a year. It's been a very poor community looking for development. But is this just a standoff between two regions?
No, I don't think so. There's certainly an economic element to Somerset County. This particular project, which, by the way, I'm not a spokesman for that project,
right?
But this particular project would mean a very, very substantial economic boost to Somerset County. But this has far-reaching impact. It's not an issue, as I perceive it, that is a battle between two parts of the state. I see it as a situation where I represent a number of leading wind energy companies, turbine manufacturers, public interest groups who all want to see the development of wind industry. Maryland's been a leader in clean energy. If they went forward with this bill, if this bill was not vetoed and enacted, this would put a tremendous chill on the business environment for investment from wind companies coming into the state. There's a substantial amount of potential wind availability or sites for availability on land, but a tremendous amount of offshore possibilities. But if developers who are going to be spending hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars in aggregate to build in a state, and they see that a project's been going on for nearly 4 years at this point and has gone through whatever process they're supposed to have gone through at this point, worked out deals to make sure that the environment's being protected, that the base's radar is not going to be impacted through a mitigation agreement. This will scare away investment in the state. So it's not even the $200 million of investment on this one particular project. It could mean literally over $1 billion worth of investment that could come to the state, or more if we start seeing some offshore wind development in the state.
So to describe for me the deal that at least the proposal that's been put forward to deal with the fact that these turbines obviously can affect the radar at the naval station.
Yeah, the concern is when the turbines are in operation, since they're moving, they could have an impact on the radar, and that's recognized, and that's not the company Pioneer Green recognizes that, and so they went through a federal process with what they call the clearinghouse process with the federal government, which is a process to deal specifically with these types of issues. They've sat down with the base itself and said, how do we work this out so you're not adversely affected in any way by this project? And they negotiated for quite some time. And basically what they came up with is, we will make sure we will turn off those turbines whenever needed, whenever requested. And so basically, and there's zero impact on the radar when those turbines aren't in operation. And they can be tethered down and completely not in operation. So there's an absolute way of dealing with this. And so we think that it's just this super sensitivity to the fact that the base is there and you have the BRAC Commission coming up, the federal commission that determines base closings, and we think that this would not play any part of it. And going even a little bit further, David Beloit, who provided testimony during the Senate hearing a couple weeks ago, was previously the executive director of the Department of Defense Siting Clearinghouse from 2010 to 2012. He's in strong opposition to the bill because he basically says the same thing. He says once that mitigation agreement was determined and the Navy was fine, seemed to be fine with that particular agreement that was worked out, that this would completely inoculate the base from these radar concerns. He was, by the way, he was also a flight commander for 2 years at one of the major Air Force bases in the Air Force.
I want to now take a look a little briefly at sort of a larger view of that. We're going to come back to Bruce Barquette. He's the executive director of the Mid-Atlantic Renewable Energy Coalition. But I want to take a look at the broader scope in terms of the impact of the of this kind of moratorium that might have on wind power in general. Finally, I want to turn to Gregory Farley. He's chair of the Clean Energy Technical Education Task Force created by legislation last year. He is also director of the Center for Leadership in Environmental Education and an associate professor of biological science at Chesapeake College. Well, you've written a piece that appeared in the Easton Democrat about this project, and one of the things you say is the moratorium would impact not just Somerset County and the project there, but also much of Dorchester, Talbot, and Caroline counties. Explain what you mean by that.
So what the bill proposes is a roughly semicircular area on the eastern shore centered on the Patuxent River Naval Air Station. And the semicircle is meant to describe the range of the Adams radar at Pax River. And so as you move away from Pax River, the moratorium area is graduated in height. There are height requirements set at different distances from the radar, indicating that you could build a turbine at different heights, at differing distances from the turbine. Our position on this as a college, though, is that some of those height restrictions are very, very small. For example, most of Dorchester County is under a 0-foot height restriction, where wind power would be technically impossible. And much of the rest of the county, and this also creeps a little bit into southern Talbot, is under a 50-foot restriction. And there's simply very little in the way of useful, harnessable wind energy at 50 feet above the ground. By way of comparison, our turbine at Chesapeake College is 120 feet at the hub and 150 feet to the top of the blades. So although our turbine on campus will be fine under the proposed law, what the law would do would be to make it very difficult to develop wind energy at any reasonable scale for distributed generation. I'm not talking utility scale 600-foot turbines here. I'm talking about turbines 300 feet and under are going to be very difficult to build in large sectors of our service region on the Eastern Shore. And we had sort of read the tea leaves a little bit, and we expected wind power and solar and other renewable energy to be a growth industry on the shore. It allows for farmers to plant something else on their field that provides them a more or less constant return while taking up very little agricultural footprint. And we were sort of hoping that this was going to be something we'd be able to do for the folks in our service region.
So what kind of impact do you see this having in terms of this goal to achieve, say, 20% of the state's energy from renewable sources by 2022? What does that mean?
So in my capacity as chair of the task force, I heard a lot about this. It's fantastic that Maryland has the renewable portfolio standard. The states that have those are further down the road towards getting better return on their investment in renewable energy, and they're getting more renewable energy onto the grid faster than states that don't have that. And so we asked some very explicit questions of companies that came to speak to the task force, and we said, what is it about Maryland that's attractive to you? How can we help prepare people for that workforce? And what we heard over and over again was the policy environment in Maryland is favorable for this because you have this standard and because there are relatively few, and there are some reasonable limitations, but relatively few limitations on what you can develop. And one solar developer to whom I spoke, and I should note that HB 1168 doesn't really impact solar,
right,
but one solar developer to whom I spoke did say that if the policy environment were to change, and he referenced HB 1168, that developers would begin looking askance at Maryland and would make it very hard for us to meet our renewable portfolio standard because it puts roughly 40% of the land area of Maryland out of commission for the development of wind power.
Were you surprised at the kind of overwhelming vote that was that took place in the state legislature? I mean, this wasn't close at all. And now, of course, Governor O'Malley has to make a decision about whether he's going to sign this legislation or not. But were you surprised at that?
Yes and no. Yes, in that I think there was a lot of, I don't want to say misinformation, but I think there was a lot of misunderstanding about the need for the bill. I think there was a lot of people who, for good reason, don't want to be perceived as anti-military. And so anything that's good for Patuxent River is good for a large number of people in southern Maryland. It's an important economic driver, and it's an important piece in national security. So on that front, I'm not very surprised that people would vote to protect Patuxent River. What I was surprised is that this is a, I think it was said in the House hearing when it was still a bill in the House, was this is a solution in need of a problem. There are already agreements in place to help protect one proposed wind farm that were brokered directly between the wind farm and the Patuxent River leadership. And that seemed adequate to everybody concerned until this bill came up. And I think it was a bit of a surprise on that front.
Because there's been, one of the things has been raised is the idea of national security on the one hand versus trying to achieve this wind farm on the other. What do you think about that the conflict that they're raising?
I think we have a great opportunity here. Patuxent River is, from what I understand, a very specialized radar installation. It has an important piece in our national security architecture. But if we could find a way forward to work between solar developers and wind developers and land use developers on the Eastern Shore in the radar shed and the base to mutually agreeable compromises, and a good compromise means nobody's going to get everything they want all the time. But if we could work towards a series of reasonable compromises, I think we have a really great opportunity to lead the nation in this. There are other places in the nation where there are renewable energy proposals within radar range of active military bases, and we need to find a solution for this. And I was sort of hoping that we could be it here in Maryland.
Are you optimistic?
I don't want to say anything that's going to box the governor into a corner. There is a lot of consideration, or there are a lot of considerations for the governor here. Some of them are about protecting his wind power legacy, and some of them are protecting his relationship with small and medium-sized wind developer businesses in the state. Some of them are about his political aspirations. Some of them are about his relationship with the military. I think there's a lot for him to consider. So I'm gonna dodge the question, if I can do so.
By the way, one final question about that sort of politics. Were you surprised? My understanding is that Congressman Andy Harris also favored this moratorium. Are you surprised at that? Because he represents this area. I mean, have there been any discussions with him? Or
I have not talked to him, and I know of nobody who has. Mm-hmm. The United States legislative presence that showed up at the Senate hearing was largely in the person of Steny Hoyer, the minority whip. And I don't know that I've heard anybody speak to Congressman Harris about this. Given his party membership, though, I think you can reasonably expect him to support anything that sounds like it's in favor of military readiness. I think that's a fairly consistent stance among Republicans.
We've been speaking with Gregory Farley. He's a chair of the Clean Energy Technical Education Task Force that was created by legislation last year. He's also the director of the Center for Leadership in Environmental Education, as well as an associate professor of biological science at Chesapeake College. Appreciate you coming in and speaking with us.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you. And we'll now turn back to Bruce Burkett. He is the executive director of the Mid-Atlantic Renewable Energy Coalition. So if this were to happen, that there was supposed to be a delay, what sense do you get about what this company is going to do? It's already indicated that it would be a burden. Do you think if this delay went into effect, the project might be ended? I mean, what sense do you get from them?
Well, all I can tell you there is what I've read, what I've heard their developers say, and they've basically said this would be an end to their project, that would be a completely unreasonable delay, and that they would not go forward with the project. That's what I've heard, but I have not had direct conversations with them on that specific issue, but I think that's been reported in the papers as well.
So if the governor signs this, as far as you're concerned, the prognosis is that this great project is at an end then?
Yeah, I would say this project, and maybe from my point of view, the bigger picture would be who's going to want to invest and spend 3-4 however many years in the state developing and investing millions of dollars, and then to find out the rules change on them at the last minute. So I think that's the key from my point of view, and the fact that, you know, maybe it would make sense if there was information that showed that this really would be a problem to the radar without the mitigation agreement, but that's not the case.
Wind power on the peninsula seems to be having difficulties. We've run into this difficulty here. There were some proposals up in Delaware for, I think it was Blue Water, that they would also have some develop a wind farm, which apparently has not come to fruition. What is the problem, or what are the obstacles are you facing then in terms of this kind of energy?
Well, there are two different types of projects.
Yeah.
In my previous capacity, I was the executive director of the Delaware Public Service Commission.
Okay.
So
you know all about it then.
I know all about Blue Water Wind, and that was based on economics, and that was an offshore wind project. And ultimately, it was shelved according to the company as the economics just weren't there to build that project, even though they had entered into agreements to do it. This is a much different situation. It's a land-based project. We've seen two projects in Maryland. They're in Western Maryland and Garrett County that are developed, that are operating. There are other projects on the drawing board. I know there's one up in Kent County that's underway right now, being developed by a company called Apex Wind Energy. The prognosis based on this bill could be devastating because of the message that it sends. But, there is interest because of new technology changes in the wind industry. They're making the turbines much more efficient and have the ability to deliver or have significantly more capacity for generating wind. Areas that were once not as desirable are becoming desirable, like the Eastern Shore. So, the fear would be, of course, that this bill and any other types of negative and maybe, in my opinion, unjustified rules or regulations or laws against wind development obviously are going to have a problem. But it's all going to be based on economics, and it's all going to be based on what kind of policies and environment. When I say environment, but the political environment, the policy environment supporting wind, it's all going to be based on that as to whether these projects get built ultimately.
The Eastern Shore, is there something special about the Eastern Shore in terms of wind? My understanding is that it may be sort of one of the better places to generate wind. What is it about the Eastern Shore?
It is. I mean, it definitely is. It's one of the better places. It has better wind capacity. It may not have been that case 5-10 years ago until the turbine technology changed, but it does have a good wind resource. It's not, there's a lot of land, there's a lot of farms, and wind turbines and farms work very well together. I think one thing that we should emphasize is that the other part of this is not just the jobs, it's not just the investment in the businesses down there, but there's going to be significant lease payments to farmers and other landowners for these turbines. And we're talking millions of dollars over the life of this project, just this particular project. And oftentimes wind developments in these, I say, less populated, maybe sometimes poorer counties, end up becoming the highest taxpayers in those counties. And so there's a boon to the tax base and the advantages that go into being able to fund schools and other services to the residents of the county.
We've been speaking with Bruce Burkett. He's the executive director of the Mid-Atlantic Renewable Energy Coalition. Also in this segment, we talked with Gregory Farley. He's chair of a task force that was created by the legislature to deal with the issue of wind farms. This has been Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush. Thanks for listening.
This has been Delmarva Today, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Chris Rank produces and is our audio engineer. Don Rush is your host. For podcasts, visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, or subscribe to the Delmarva Today podcast in iTunes. Delmarva Today can now be seen on PAC 14. To view the schedule, visit the Daily Times or visit pac14.org.